Well, good morning once again. If you would, go ahead and open up your Bible to, I believe it's page 896 in your pew Bible. We're looking at John chapter 10, verses 1 through 18. Hear now God's word. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him, the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life, have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock and one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." Would you pray with me? Father, may it be now that the only voice we hear is the voice of you speaking through your Son by your Spirit. Lead us to the life abundant that Jesus, your Son, came to give us. Amen. Well, this morning we are looking at one of several of what are called Jesus's I am statements. These are little statements in John's gospel that we could say in some sense are like the gospel in one sentence. Because they reveal something about God and about his character, they are like the gospel. They are revealing the full nature of what our redemption entails, something about who God is, but also something about our need. And if you wanted to think of it like this, you could say that if Jesus had a Twitter account, I'm not saying he would, but if he did, these kind of statements would fit nicely. These are very short, succinct statements of the gospel in one sentence. And the particular statement we're looking at this morning where Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd," this is a statement that goes right to the heart of what every single one of us longs for, and yet at the same time is something we are deeply, deeply skeptical of. We long to be led. We long to be shepherded. And yet we're skeptical of it. This idea of leading, I mean, having someone over you, having someone rule over you, having someone tell you what to do. We long for this, but yet we're skeptical of it. And Jesus says, "This is me. This is who I am. This is what I came to do. I came to be that person over you." To be led, to be shepherded, we could say is simply this. It's to entrust what matters the most to you, what is most precious to you, to someone you believe is competent enough, is qualified enough, and is caring enough. We long for this. We every single one of us, we long for this. We long to entrust those things that are most important to us to someone that is competent, qualified, and caring enough, and yet we're skeptical of it. Think about it from the time we're children. We come to this world, we are completely reliant on others to show us the way. To shepherd us. Our parents, our grandparents, our siblings were entirely dependent on them to help us, to show us the way. And really, we never outgrow this need. It's like it's built into the fabric of reality. Even as adults, we outsource this need. Our real estate agents, our financial advisors, our counselors, our pastors, philosophies, et cetera, et cetera. We never outgrow this need to be led, to be shepherded. And yet we're deeply skeptical of those who lead. We're cynical of those with power and authority, politicians, CEOs, even pastors. We all know these stories of leaders who have abused their power. And this morning, Jesus capitalizes on using this language of shepherding because he knows that despite our skepticism, We long to be shepherded. We need to be shepherded. And he shows us four things we need to understand. First, he shows us that we need to know that bad shepherds exist. Bad shepherds exist. Second, we need to know the voice of the good shepherd when we hear it. Third, we need to follow him when he calls. And then fourth, receive from him what he gives. So let's jump into this. First, you got to know that bad shepherds exist. Our passage actually begins in the middle of a conflict, and it's a conflict that goes back to chapter 9. If you go back to chapter 9, you'll see there that Jesus has just healed this man that was born blind. And after being healed, this man, he's taken to the religious leaders of the day. The Pharisees, and he's brought before these leaders, and they begin to interrogate him. They begin to challenge him. They begin to just ask him all of these questions. They're trying to understand, how did you get healed? How did you get this healing? And they're bothered by what they've witnessed. They don't believe him. They're absolutely bothered by him. And the reason they're bothered is because the transformation of this man doesn't, the experience of this man doesn't fit into their categories. Jesus doesn't fit into their categories. Jesus colors outside the lines, if you will. And so what these religious leaders do in response to Jesus healing this man is they excommunicate him. They cast him out of the community. They kick this man out of the community that he belonged to. And so what we're seeing in our passage in John 10 is Jesus calling these religious leaders to account. He's calling them out. It's interesting. He doesn't critique their theology. He doesn't critique their ethics. He doesn't tell them they need counseling, they need to have a better bedside manner. No, he says they're false shepherds. And this is what we're seeing here. Jesus is trying to show us the difference between a false shepherd and a good shepherd. So let's quickly look at how Jesus assesses these religious leaders. First, notice verses 1 and 8. Jesus calls them thieves and robbers. The commentator, Dale Bruner, I love how he translates this. He says they are rip-off artists. They're posers. These are leaders who are stealing honor for themselves, and they're robbing the safety of the people that they're called to take care of. They're robbing the safety of the sheep. They want honor, and they'll take that honor, and they'll steal protection and safety away from the sheep in order to have that honor. They have one agenda, and it's just to get what they want. And then secondly, in verse 5, Jesus calls them strangers. My wife and I, we have this ongoing conversation with our oldest son, Woods, about how we're called to love our neighbors as Jesus taught us. And we use this children's catechism that asks him, who is your neighbor? You know what the answer is? Everyone. It's an awesome answer. It's a great answer. And so naturally, Woods treats everyone as his neighbor. Everyone is his friend. And it's really cool, but sadly, we've had to also tell him, buddy, not everyone is a good neighbor. There are bad people out there you can't trust that actually might want to do harm to you. And that is the point that Jesus is making. Not everyone who comes to you is coming with good intentions. These false shepherds are strangers you do not want to let in. And then thirdly, in verse 12, he calls them hired hands. Now, there's nothing inherently evil with this description, but the point is this. These shepherds care more about wages than sheep, which is why Jesus says when wolves come, what do the hired hands do? They flee. They run away because they care more about their welfare than the welfare of the sheep. And here's the main point that Jesus is making with all of this. With all of these descriptions, Jesus is saying this. False shepherds see people as expendable, not those to whom they are responsible. They don't see God's people as precious, but as paltry. They see people as means, not as ends. It's all about what they can get, not what they are called to give. And the dangerous thing about them is that they actually, initially, they come across appearing good. That's what makes them so deceptive. Their danger is in their deception. It's why Jesus says in Matthew's gospel that they're whitewashed tombs. They look clean. They look beautiful. You'd see them and you'd think, he looks like he's got it all together. But inside, they're death. They're absolute death. As I think about this church here and all that you've been through, and I know it's been, you can't really even say it's been a difficult season, obviously. It's been one of the hardest seasons a church will ever go through. That being said, the Lord has been so kind to you the last 2 years in giving you a shepherd. For 2 years, and I know the story of this church, I know that there are people praying for a shepherd. And God provided that shepherd. God gave you a shepherd. He gave you Andrew. He placed Andrew over you. And that was God's kindness to you, to care for you, to protect you, to defend you. Andrew was a good shepherd. He's still a good shepherd. He called me this morning, 20 minutes before the service, to check on me, to check on you. I mean, that was the shepherd you have. He's an amazing man. He's an amazing shepherd. And through Andrew, God has watched over you, and he's cared for you, he's nourished you, and he's fed you. And as the Lord leads you into this next season, he will continue to do that. He will continue to provide and defend and to care for you. Because ultimately, this is his church. But as a minister, it's important for me to say this. If what Jesus has been saying in this text is true, and it is, then false shepherds are real. They exist. They prey on God's people. They prey on the people that God calls precious. And that's scary. That is dangerous. That is a reality. I mean, there are probably shepherds, false shepherds on this island. There are false shepherds really wherever there are churches. And we're given texts like this to be aware of that, especially as you're moving into a new season. Jesus says they are wolves who come to you in sheep's clothing. And so the essential question to be asked is this: how do you tell a true shepherd from a false shepherd? How do you keep from falling prey to false shepherds? And Jesus says it's simple. You have to know the voice of the good shepherd. So secondly, the voice of the good shepherd. A common practice for all shepherds, both really ancient and modern, is that they have to train their sheep to be attuned to only one voice, their voice. One example of how this works is shepherds, when they often drive herds together with other shepherds. So you'll have a bunch of shepherds on these long drives, and they'll put all the herds together. They'll drive together. In the evenings, what they would do to stop to eat and sleep is they would take all their, on these long drives, they would take all their herds and they would put them in this one big flock. And they would do this as a way to create maximal protection for the flocks, because then all the shepherds would camp around the flock. But on the next morning, when they would get ready to continue their drive, all the shepherds would separate. They would spread out around the flock, and they would get distance from the flock. And the way they would begin to gather their sheep is they would begin to make their call, their distinct call. Maybe they had a flute, maybe they had a unique voice or sound they would make, but they would begin to make this unique, distinct sound, this call. And sure enough, you would have this herd here, and all of a sudden you would start seeing sheep breaking out of the herd and going in all different directions and going to their shepherd. And it's in that way that the shepherd would begin to gather his flock, because the sheep knew his voice. The sheep knew his voice. Four times in this passage, Jesus talks about the importance of the sheep knowing the shepherd's voice. And the reason he uses this language here is because he is saying, you and I, we are like sheep. We're all like sheep. One way we're like sheep is that we are lost and helpless without a shepherd. In the ancient world, you would never see wild sheep running around. Do you know why? Because they would get eaten. they would get into poisonous roots, or they would starve to death. Without a shepherd, they make a mess of themselves. They make a mess of their lives. And Jesus says, so do you. So do we. So do I. Now, sure, you may be doing well in one area of life. You know, we all kind of have that area that we kind of are really good at. But there's another area that you're completely blind to. We rarely see ourselves rightly. We never hit on all cylinders. For example, you may be doing well in your career. You may be bringing in money. You may have a great home. You may be living out your dream, providing for your family, etc., etc. But your relationships are a mess. You're blind to your sharp tongue. You're blind to the crushing burden of unrealistic demands that you put upon yourself, but you also put upon others. Or maybe you have great relationships. Maybe people love you. Maybe everyone looks up to you, but your private life is a mess. You lack self-control, you lack self-discipline, or maybe when you're alone, you just want to cry. You feel like you're on the verge of a meltdown. Jesus sees all of us desperately trying to hold it together and says, on your own, you can only make a mess of your life. And he says to all of us, I've come to shepherd you. I've come to bring you life. Second, though, we're actually worse than sheep. Why? Because we're prone to follow false shepherds. Jesus says sheep don't follow the voice of strangers, but sadly we do. Some of us have been looking for a shepherd all our lives. It could be in a person or an institution. We look to financial gurus, health gurus, naturopaths, self-help gurus, politicians, our relationships, all of these. We look to them to shepherd us, to bring us abundant life, but they never do. They promise something they can never deliver. And listen, the thing is, none of these are actually bad in themselves. That's what's deceiving about them. But they aren't the true shepherd you really need. They can't give you the ultimate life that you are longing for. And then some of us have given up and we have grown cynical altogether towards needing to be a shepherd. But that just leaves us as our own shepherd. And think about it. What makes you think that you are competent, more competent than everyone else to run your life? There is no proof. But we grow cynical, and that's where we land. We end up shepherding our own lives, and again, we make a mess of ourselves. And what you and I need, what everyone needs, is to hear above all the voices in our lives a voice we can absolutely trust, the voice of a shepherd, and not just the voice of any shepherd, but the voice of the true shepherd. And Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I am the only one who is competent enough, credentialed enough, and cares enough to shepherd your soul and even to shepherd your destiny. But the challenge is, you can only know he is the true shepherd if you follow him when he calls. Have you heard his voice? Are you following him? His sheep hear his voice. Do you know his voice? Do you hear his voice? Do you follow him when he calls? So thirdly, we must follow him when he calls. Twice in this passage, Jesus mentions calling his sheep, and he assumes, like any shepherd would, that his sheep would recognize his voice. His sheep will hear his voice and they'll respond. But notice how intimate and specific the call is that Jesus makes. Notice what he says in verse 3. He says, he calls his own sheep by name. And then in verse 14, he intensifies this with his emphasis on intimate knowledge. He says, I'm the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. Now think about the significance of being called by your name. This came home to me when I was living in Washington, D.C., and my ministry there required me to be on Capitol Hill virtually every week. And so every week I was meeting, tons of people on the Hill. And almost every week I would run into someone I'd previously met the week before, and I would forget their name every time, just about every time I would meet them. And you have to kind of build in this vocabulary of like, hey, man, hey, girl, because you forget people's names. And so it became such a kind of a really disrespectful and sometimes humiliating act, because then you're in a group and you can't introduce them to other people, and you realize this has to be dealt with. And so I started keeping a little notebook of people's names and their descriptions, their hair color, what they did, the offices they were in, just to give me some help, because I'm terrible with names. But you know this, when someone remembers your name, greets you by your name, introduces you to someone by your name, it just feels right. It just feels good. It's affirming when people remember your name. Having your name remembered, known, even being addressed by your name, it's one of the most dignifying things that can be done to you and that you can do for someone else. But for shepherds, knowing the names of their sheep, it's way more than just a name like Casey or Susan or Michael. No, for shepherds, the names they gave their sheep, they were more like pet names. We do this with our spouses, actually. It expresses fondness and familiarity. I call my wife Love. You probably have a pet name for your spouse. And what this is, what shepherds are doing when they have these pet names, it's like they're looking around at their flock. And he's asking, Where's Long Ears? Where's Spot? Where's Shaggy? Where's Limp? You see, it's his naming. It's the naming that is specific to something about the sheep. To the very details of that sheep. It's a naming that shows that he has paid attention to everything about that sheep, that he knows that sheep, that he keeps a record of everything about that sheep and what has happened to that sheep and what makes that sheep unique and rest of the flock. So in other words, what Jesus is saying is that when I call you by name, it is more like, I know your story. I know what I'm calling you from. I know what you have been through. I know the trials and sufferings you have experienced. I know how much it hurts. I know how foolish you've been. I know the scars you have. I know how ashamed you are. I know when you're most afraid. I know what excites you. I know what continues to haunt you. His calling out to you, if and when he calls, listen, it is specific. It is personal. It's covenantal. It takes your whole story into account. Because he wants to tend to you. He is a shepherd. Now, on the one hand, this is a tremendous comfort to us. Think about it. That God himself knows and he cares about your likes, your dislikes. He actually cares about those. He cares about your needs and your weaknesses, your quirks, your wounds, the past you never talk about with anyone because you're ashamed of. There's not a nook or cranny of your life that he does not know exhaustively, that he does not care about, that he even knows our deepest sins and our darkest secrets, and he still wants to tend to us, and he wants to go there. But this is also unsettling to us. While on the one hand, we desire to be known, on the other hand, we fear it. Some of you are saying, I desperately want people to know me, but once someone begins to move towards you, you clam up. You withdraw. And we've all done this, and why? Because we're afraid that if we're fully known, we'll be rejected. That we will not be loved. I mean, think of physical examinations. None of us can stand the scrutiny of a physical examination, being completely physically exposed before someone. But really, that emotional, that spiritual examination that we get before God, I mean, who can withstand that? But that's where God goes with us. That's how he wants to know us. He wants to know all of us, and he does know all of us. So what if you could be fully known and wholly loved? Not wholly affirmed, that wouldn't be loving, but wholly loved. What if you could be fully known and wholly loved? That's the kind of knowledge Jesus has of us, that he has of his sheep. Penetrating, exhaustive, accurate knowledge of each one of us. He knows you all the way to the bottom, all the way to the bottom, and he does not abandon you. What shepherd do you have in your life like that? That knows you that way, that shepherds you in such a way that he knows every move you're going to make. He's there before you've even gone there. This is how he knows you. This is how he calls you. And when he calls you, do you receive from him what he gives to you? So finally, you must receive from him what he gives. In verse 10, Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy, but I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Abundant life, this is what Jesus came to give. This is what he leads us into. But what is abundant life? Is this a life of material abundance? Is this a life free from hardship? It may feel like that at times. We've all probably had moments where we thought, this is the abundant life. I have everything I want. There's nothing going wrong in my life. But what happens when the stuff goes away? When the economy crashes? Family isn't what you thought it would be? Or the medical report comes back? What happens when trials come and they never leave? Ever. So what is the abundant life? Look at verse 3 and 4. Jesus says he leads them out, and when he's brought out all his own, he goes before them and the sheep follow him. And then verse 9, Jesus says, I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. These phrases he uses here, Jesus uses here, to go in and out, these are Hebrew idioms. That means something like to be led into freedom. That's why Jesus says that if you enter through him, you will find pasture. You will find freedom. In other words, what Jesus is saying is that the abundant life, the true life, the life we were created for, is a life of true freedom. But what kind of freedom? Is it personal freedom? Is it freedom from struggle? What kind of freedom? What is this freedom that he brings us? First, it's freedom from the one thing that destroys and ravages human lives. And this is the scandal of the gospel that you can enter into right now. You can actually be freed from the one thing that is destroying this creation. Sin itself. Evil itself. Jesus brings that kind of freedom. And with that, it's freedom from your past. Everything about your past, everything that you're ashamed of, everything that is too dark for you to actually look at and talk about. Jesus says you're free from that forever. It's gone, clear. It's freedom from the need of having control. If he is your shepherd, you don't have to have control of your life. You don't have to worry about your life. It is in his hands now. Do not be anxious, he says, about what you will eat, about what you will wear. You don't have to worry about that stuff, he says. That is a gift to you that you do not have to be anxious. It's freedom from self. It's freedom from all the idiosyncratic obsessions that you have. We all have those. But it's most importantly, it's this. Notice, it's not freedom that is so much found in staying within the confines of a sheep pen, but it's freedom that is found in staying close to the shepherd. In other words, the free life, the abundant life, is life in Jesus. Wherever he goes, you can follow him and you'll have freedom with him, wherever he goes. And by faith, we enter this freedom. By faith, we grow in this freedom. And the closer you are to him, the more you commune with him, the freer you become. But not only the freer you become, but the safer you become. Jesus also leads us into safety, and this is where we'll close. Jesus guards us. Notice that Jesus actually uses another I am statement. He says, I am the door. Now, this is a change in metaphor, but what Jesus is pointing to here is a practice that was common for shepherds in the ancient world who were on long herding trips by themselves, no longer with other shepherds, but by themselves. And what they'd have to do is they'd have to set up a makeshift shelter in the wild. And usually with these shelters, there would not have been a door. There would just been kind of a whatever he had to make a shelter. And he would set this up. And for the door, for the entrance to the shelter, the shepherd would lay down. He would lay down in the entrance. He would lay down where there would be a door. He would be the door to the shelter. He would guard the shelter. So to leave the shelter or into the shelter, you actually had to pass over the shepherd. And a shepherd would never let his sheep out of this shelter. And he would never let anyone who was a stranger into that shelter. So think about what he's saying here. It's saying that he guards us from ourselves, from our foolishness to wander. And oh, do we need it? Do I need it? Our foolish tendency is to wander away from God himself. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. He guards us from that. But not only does he guard us from ourselves, but he guards us from intruders, from ravenous wolves. Verse 12, Jesus says, contrasted to a hired hand, he doesn't run when he sees danger. He stays put. He defends us. In fact, he puts himself in the place of our danger. And he defends us to the end, so much so that he lays down his life. So think about this. Wherever he leads you, he always goes as your protector and your defender. If Jesus leads you into suffering and hardship, you're never alone. If he leads you into the valley of death, fear no evil, he says, I'm there with you. His rod and his staff, they comfort you. And he never leads you to abandon you. This is what false shepherds do. Jesus is not a false shepherd, he's a true shepherd, the good shepherd, the shepherd of your souls. And listen, wherever he's leading you, whatever he leads you through, whatever he leads you into, we know this, the end is ultimately into greener pastures. The greenest pastures, into the fullness of abundant life. Here in a moment, we're going to come to the Lord's table and see that the one who leads you is the one who laid down his life for you. Because the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. And this is how you can know he is competent enough, he is qualified enough, and he cares enough. Because he lays down his life for you. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.